Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show with guest host Bill Ryder on CBS Sports Radio.
All right, welcome back into the Jim Rome Show. Bill Ryder filling in. The program is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. Big UFC fight, last minute UFC fight coming up this weekend. I keep saying this weekend because I feel like I should be saying 5 weeks from now. Brian Campbell, UFC guru for CBS Sports and Showtime, will be on the show about 15 minutes to talk about that. One of my favorites in the business, Howard Beck, NBA writer for Bleacher Report, will be on at the end of the hour. Howard hates so-called hot takes. I'll try to think of four or five to throw his way just so we can try to get him frustrated on the air. Therese Paylor, national NFL writer for Yahoo Sports, about an hour and 20 minutes to talk about Patrick Mahomes and that massive contract. Human nature is such that you want to fit in, right? You want to feel like you belong and you do a good job. And as I've discussed multiple times, love being on the show. Huge Jim Rome fan. As a former clone, just as a fan of Jim Rome, the human being, I'm a fan. And so it's cool to be here. But, you know, you're still an outsider. You're still a fill-in. Had a moment yesterday, and I'll ask Garrett if this makes sense, where I feel like maybe I crossed one of these lines to get closer to being on the inside. There is a camera here, and those of you who listen to the show know a lot, that people have walked into this camera at full speed. I believe Adam Hawk almost gave himself a concussion once, and the guys and I've almost hit it many times. And yesterday, multiple times, I said to Evan DeLauro and Garrett Ritt, that camera, I hit it full steam yesterday at full speed in the first hour. And while it hurt, Garrett, kind of feels like a rite of passage here on the show.
Jim just did it a few months ago and talked about it for the rest of the show. He was never right. He felt like concussion symptoms. Even the next day, he said there was something wrong. That camera that floats by that door to the studio is deadly, and it packs a punch. It does not give. It has taken out now three people in the studio. So welcome to the club, I guess. I haven't been hit by it yet, but I've come damn close.
Really? And I looked up, I'm like, oh, dang it, Alvin saw. Like, I was just going to pass it off. But, yeah. Human being zero? Might even be four, because that felt like a double to me. It really... So anyway, so, you know...
The other camera will catch it. So if that can, you know, if you don't see it. Oh, yeah, angle's right at it.
So they saw it in New York on CBS.
More than likely, it was caught somewhere. Oh, since it wasn't during the actual airing of the show.
Hey.
During a break, you may have saved yourself.
Hopefully you can live with me as a fill-in and you like the show. But short of that, I've given you physical pain as part of a sacrifice to be here on the program. Speaking of physical pain and sacrifices... That is 100% what I feel as a fan of Major League Baseball. It's almost a physical discomfort. By the way, that doesn't even get into the fact. I'm not even a Dodgers fan, but I like Dodgers fans because I did radio here in L.A. They couldn't get the Dodgers on television. Think about this. L.A. is the second biggest market in America. They couldn't get them on television for years. Hey, commissioner, step in. And we discussed this. I discussed this nonstop yesterday. How much of a stark failure it is by Major League Baseball that they're not underway right now. And they didn't own and capture all of this opportunity for the attention and really the loyalty of people who need something to watch. And it went to soccer. But I thought, okay, this was doing, you know, this is one of the things I talked about here on the Jim Rome Show yesterday. I thought, okay, at least, you know, Monday evening, Monday afternoon, depending where you are, schedule comes out and we'll talk about it. And the schedule did come out. Yankees at Nationals is a really interesting game. I mean, Scherzer versus Cole is a hell of a showdown. And by the way, we know this, 60 games, we'll do the math, 162, that's, you know, not very many compared to normal. Every game is significant. Every game is like watching a series. This is cool about baseball. Every game is almost a series. So that game is almost the equivalent of 2.5-3 games of importance in the standings. In the past, it was, man, I hope my Cubbies can take 2 out of 3 from the Cardinals. Now it's, yeah, well, the equivalent of that is basically winning every single time you play these guys. Brewers at Cubs, speaking of my Cubs. And the NL Central is going to be super interesting. It could be a four-team race. The hated Giants are coming down to play the Dodgers. And for those of you on the West Coast, you know, not just a rivalry. Farhan Zaidi, the GM of the Dodgers and the, you know, sort of consigliere to Andrew Friedman, is in charge of the Giants. There's a lot of, and there's a lot of great games. It's opening day. And do you know what the actual story of Major League Baseball is today? It is an MVP, formerly, in Chris Bryant, talking at some length about the fact that they can't get tests. And it's a very, I think, well-done statement. He, because one of the catch-22s for all sports, not just baseball, is you have to do testing repeatedly in order for players to feel safe. And that was one of the agreements, by the way, baseball made with the players. And that doesn't change the fact that in states where it's going to get hard to get tests, and that could happen in places like Arizona, in places like Florida, in places like Texas, there's going to be a disconnect between you or me, you know, Joe Blow, unable to get a test, and baseball players and NBA players get them every day. But I wouldn't want to go to work in a setting like that if I couldn't get that kind of test. And if it were promised to me, I would expect it. I would expect it. Major League Baseball, according to Chris Bryant, has not delivered. Chris Bryant letting us know, among other failures, again by Major League Baseball, guys on his team showing up, getting tested, getting results 7 days later. And by the way, I'm not, you know, maybe I got a test 2 weeks ago. I got the results 2 days later. I'm a nobody. This is Chris Bryant and his teammates. And not only is that unfair to that teammate, if you're Chris Bryant, that's a problem. Because you don't know if whoever it is, Javi Baez, whoever it is you have to know that everyone around you is negative or quarantined. Oh, sorry, got the test 3 weeks later. Turned out you were positive. Sorry you didn't get a quarantine. I guess the whole team's infected. That's what they're facing. And the one that's amazing to me, and I guess when you win a, when you're the GM of a team that wins a World Series, you got some more latitude. He used it. Mike Rizzo also said, quote, I love this. Good for this guy. Good for this guy. Quote, we will not sacrifice, because again, not enough tests for players. And not, this isn't something they're requesting. It's something they negotiated and was promised to them. And anything that's promised in a contract or negotiation should be upheld. We should be people of our word. When it comes to your health and safety, you'd think you'd be particular about people making good on that part of, the, of their word. Not so with the Nationals either. And Rizzo let us know, quote, we will not sacrifice the health and safety of our players, staff, and their families. Without accurate and timely testing, it is simply not safe for us to continue a summer camp. And according to a source, this is unbelievable, talking to the Washington Post, Mr. Manfred, the commissioner, saw Rizzo's comments as insubordination. I shouldn't say this about a grown man. I understand that. I shouldn't say this about someone of importance, and it's you know, I probably could say it better, but shut up, Manfred. Stop it. Shut up. Insubordination. Sitting in your ivory tower on your pretend throne, passing judgment on some GM trying to protect his players in the sport. You know what Mike Rizzo's doing? It's not insubordination. It's this crazy thing called competence. Have you ever noticed that the incompetent always call those beneath them trying to do the right thing insubordinate? Well, if insubordination is the same thing as competence, then the person calling insubordination needs to step away. Mike Rizzo did a service to his players and to the game of baseball. We don't have tests. We need them to operate. Do you know who that applies to beyond the ballplayers who make millions of dollars a year, who are entitled to what they're entitled to? The folks who need the money because they're the cameramen. The folks who need the money because they're in sports media. The folks who hope eventually we can get back to some fans in those stadiums so they can sell some concessions. People's lives, these are multi-billion dollar leagues that don't just fund the lifestyles of the ultimately successful, the Mahomes and the Chris Bryant and the LeBron James. There's a whole economic ecosystem that exists underneath all of this. And that's what Manfred is jeopardizing. And the health and safety of his own players. Come on, baseball. Look, I'm going to get to some calls here in just a second. 1-800-636-8686. But can you get your head out of your you-know-what and get your job done? Squandered weeks of baseball. And now that you've come, and by the way, here's the other distinction that I think is important to make. NBA players, and I'm not saying that baseball players should make bigger sacrifices than NBA players. You negotiate what you negotiate. But NBA players are being asked to go into a bubble, away from their families, away from their kids. Let's just be honest. You're a 25-year-old in prime shape. You're not going to have sex for 2 or 3 months. I think Stephen A. probably hit on it. Good luck with that. Those are real sacrifices. You're going to be away from your children? You're going to be away from your lifestyle? But at least at the level of safety that we think, we hope NBA is going to bring to that world. Baseball players don't have to do that. They don't have, they get to travel around the country and be in empty stadiums. But the flip side of that is they're traveling. There's more risk. There's more freedom. You get to sleep in your own bed some nights. You get to see your family. I get it. I'm a dad. I'm a husband. Those things matter. But that means the testing has to be that much more on point. And then you jeopardize the people who are bringing these baseball players food, who are flying them across the country, who are driving them in the bus. It becomes, at least for the folks in that ecosystem, a health issue. Robert Manfred, stop leaking things to the Washington Post about insubordination and do your job well. I know it's difficult for you. We've seen that. I know it's not in character. We understand that. You said there'd be tests. The health of your players, the health of your sport, the health of the people who rely on it, the health of the people forced to meet around these folks. When I was younger, I worked at Walmart for a long time when I lived in Iowa. And I come from a blue-collar background. I wake up every day and can't believe how lucky I am, the life that I have. I know what hardworking people are about. You know what the reality is of folks, most folks in this country? They have to go to work to pay their bills. If there's a job to go to, they're going to go. And that includes the folks, the service industry that operates around professional baseball teams that have to be around these guys because they have to do everything they can to support their family. Robert Manfred is jeopardizing their economic well-being as well as their health. Everybody involved in baseball. Get your act together. Ridiculous. Bill Ryder filling in. And I would love to have talked about the opening day schedule. There won't be an opening day to celebrate. It'll just be another schedule on Google that says, canceled, 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 canceled. A reminder of what could have been if they don't start operating with a level of understanding that you can't spin to the Washington Post your way out of this. This isn't a PR battle. It's a battle against a pandemic and a virus. Come on. Please, for the love of God, get it together. 1-800-636-8686. Hit a lot of things today, and we want to take your calls on that. Bill Ryder filling in for Jim Rome here on the Jim Rome Show. 1-800-636-8686. I love taking calls from Youngstown, Ohio, the cradle of coaching in this country. It's amazing how many football coaches come out of Youngstown. Great, great community. My wife's from Ohio, too. And Brendan's on the line from there. Brendan, appreciate you, buddy. You're on the Jim Rome Show.
My brother,
I'm good, man.
Long time listener, first time caller. I was actually calling for something you touched on before you had your guest. A, I think the Browns are going to win 10 games this year. I don't care what you say. And B, Sammy Watkins, in my opinion, was more on that. He had a great first game. He was on my fantasy team, and then he was out there as a decoy for most of the season. I feel like without him out there, that offense is not as strong. Your thoughts?
Appreciate the call. Yes, Watkins did have a good first game. I don't think it's a – look, I understand that that's what Sammy Watkins has been telling reporters. But when you make that kind of money, you can't be a decoy. And you watch some of the tape. And we'll talk to Tres Paylor about this because he watches tape obsessively. Yahoo, national NFL writer, columnist, and he'll be on the show here in about an hour. And we'll get his take. But toward the end, defenses, it wasn't a decoy. It was just – he just wasn't very effective. Sammy also had some drops last year. There were some big first downs where he had some drops, you know, second and 12. And then it just wouldn't matter because Mahomes would do something ridiculous, do a figure eight and throw the ball left-handed or, you know, headbutt it or whatever, you know, magic Houdini it into the guy's hands. You even see the ball move and get the first down. I think he was, I think the idea that Sammy Watkins was a decoy lost its merit over the course of that season. Let's go to Sacktown. They got an interesting situation on the NBA side. Austin, appreciate you, buddy. You're on the Jim Rome Show.
Hey, Bill. I appreciate your time, brother. I want to go to the Redskin conversation. My Native American heritage is derived from the northeastern state of Chihuahua, Mexico. My grandmother came from there. So I'm not full Comanche, but I do have the blood in me. And she educated me on why she didn't even like the name Indian, and it's because when Columbus came here, he thought he landed in India. So when she heard me use the term Indian when I was a kid, she yelled at me and she said, "You are not Indian. You are Native American. You're Comanche." And it really bugged her. So, of course, Redskins is offensive. In fact, the term Indian is offensive to a lot of people out here, so pick up a history. I would like them to change their name to the Washington Natives. Keep the logo. It's cool. I've also heard the Washington Warriors. That's all right. But if we did the Washington Natives because we're Native American, we're not Indian, I would love it. And I'll end with this. Bill, pick out your fro. I would love that. I heard you talk about it yesterday. Do it, brother. Take care.
You too. It's tamped down. Maybe I'll pick it out Friday after my good buddy Brian Weber fills in for a couple days. I might do it. Look, I am a big believer that when it comes to folks' life experiences that aren't my own, more listening, less talking is a good place to start. If you in that community believes that Natives is a workable and a respectable name, I like that. I do. Really interesting. Appreciate the call. Let's sneak one more in because I used to live in Little Rock, Arkansas, and I love Little Rock, Arkansas. I had a great couple years there out of college. Jason, what's up on the rock, buddy? You're on the Jim Rome Show.
Hey, thanks for having me, Bill. Before I get to some sports take, I just want to give you some props. I've been listening to Sports Talk for 20 years. Actually started with The Pimp in the Box, and I got to say, you're hands down far above and beyond my favorite that I've ever listened to. I was real disappointed when you left, but I understand they made an offer you can't refuse. It's good to hear you on the radio again.
Thank you, brother. That's very kind.
So on the sports thing, I'm a diehard baseball fan and diehard Cardinals fan. Sorry about that, Mr. Cubs fan.
It's okay.
But yeah, I'm one of the goofs that's going to watch it no matter what. I don't care if it's 2 months of crappy spring training baseball. I just want to see baseball on TV again. I miss it. My girlfriend's a Cubs fan. We go to Cubs cards every year. It sucks the way it's going. But like you say, they pooped the bed.
They did. Yeah, I got to tell you, that's true love, too. If you're a Cubs fan, Cardinals fan, thank you for the kind words. I got to tell you, that kind of praise for me, that's an 89% chance. That's like my cousin Ryan. Just pretending to call in from Little Rock, Arkansas. All right, well, we got a bunch of you on the line. I want to get to as many of these calls as we can because I appreciate you listening, appreciate you participating while Jim is out. 1-800-636-8686 if you want to get in line. We'll try to get to you, RomanHaveItTake.com, at Jim Rome, JimRome.com. I'm on there as well, sports writer, sports, my last name, R-E-I-T-E-R. Some big UFC news. Brian Campbell's my dude, covers UFC for CBS Sports and Showtime. He'll give us some insights when we come back in a moment here on the Jim Rome Show.
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
Hey.
Welcome back into the Jim Rome Show. Bill Ryder with you. I love this next guest. This is one of my favorite dudes I've met in the business. Combat reporter extraordinaire. CBS Sports, CBSSports.com, CBS Sports HQ, Showtime. The one and only Brian Campbell on Twitter. I follow him. I think you should too. Brian Campbell, CBS. Mr. Campbell, what's up, pal?
Oh, you know me, Billy Boy. Great to speak to you again. Fired up for fights because there may be a quarantine. But them cage fighters, they don't stop. They don't stop at all, Bill. They don't even stop once. All right, let's do it. Let's get fired up.
Apparently, they speed it up. Usman, Masvidal, UFC 251, Fight Island. How did this thing come to be so fast?
It's wild and crazy because UFC had tried to make this fight two times in the past few months. Jorge Masvidal, your rising star, flavor of the moment, pay-per-view draw, and BMF champion, twice turning down what he claimed to be short money and really started a public campaign along with people like John Jones, Conor McGregor, speaking out negatively against how UFC pays its combatants. And boy, did his risk or gamble, if you want to call that, ultimately pay off when you consider that he was called on Sunday, just 6 days before, by the UFC with an even bigger offer, a new contract, most of what he was looking for when he originally held out. And Bill, we already had a loaded card this weekend, three title fights, arguably UFC's deepest card in a while, and they essentially just doubled down on the star power by going from Gilbert Burns as a contender and challenger, who unfortunately contracted the COVID-19 and had to pull out, to now Jorge Masvidal, almost a McGregor-level star. And we're talking about big business on Saturday, and we're talking about some great fights.
I mean, 6 days, and I'm trying, you're the expert, I'm trying to remember the last time a fight of this magnitude with this kind of anticipation happened on less than a week's notice for a fighter. Is there a, yeah, is there look, a comparison?
It's wild, Bill, because it's not that we haven't seen big-time UFC or boxing fights fall apart at the last minute. In fact, I've written the same story 3 years in a row, that every year, the second week in July, UFC puts on its biggest card of the year, International Fight Week in Vegas. And for 8 of 9 years, either the main event or co-main event fell apart the week of to sort of handcuff them. You get a replacement, you get a big name now and then. I've never seen it at this level where the replacement fight is significantly better than the first one. And that's not saying that Kamaru Usman and Gilbert Burns would have been a bad fight from a performance standpoint or entertainment standpoint, but that's not a pay-per-view selling main event, so to speak, from the standpoint of crossover, mainstream fans. Now you're getting someone as hot as Jorge Masvidal, not just for the counter street culture that he brings to the cage, but the idea that at 35, he's almost like a Cinderella story. He was at journeyman status just 2 years ago, and he came back from a little bit more than a year away from the sport, did a reality show in Central America where he spent months in the woods alone and came out of there going, look, it's about time I baptize people, in his own words. We saw him in 2019, 3 knockouts where he became your fight of the year and crossover celebrity. Bill, now he can be a champion on Saturday. You really don't get this type of, Christmas morning or Hanukkah package when you already were expecting to get great gifts. And oh, by the way, Dad opens the door and a pony walks in. That's the equivalent of what we're getting on Saturday.
Ryan Campbell here on the Jim Rome Show. Bill Ryder filling in. What kind of odds do you give Masvidal to actually win this fight, given the remarkable lack of notice that he has had to prepare, as you said it, for a very big opportunity?
You know, if it was almost anyone else, I'd be telling you the warning signs here, right? 6 days notice, he had to fly to Vegas, take multiple COVID tests, then he got on a plane to Abu Dhabi, of all places. We're going to do the main event at 6 a.m. local time so that I can match up with the pay-per-view window on the East Coast here in the States. And he has to shed 20 pounds during fight week. These are all major hurdles. But the counterpoint I want to make in that is, A, everyone's going through some craziness right now in the quarantine. You and I, especially, as well, along with all of these fighters who are having short camps, unable to get the sparring they normally get. And B, Masvidal's that special personality. He literally was a street fighter in the Kimbo Slice crew in Miami before becoming a pro fighter, where he's just unflappable. He almost thrives in this type of chaos. So while this is a matchup where the odds makers are going to tell you Masvidal is the rightful underdog. Why? Because Kamaru Usman, outside of Khabib Nurmagomedov, really your best wrestler has seen in years. He can absolutely smother and swallow you up on the ground. But if anybody has watched Jorge Masvidal's evolution over the past year, he can end a fight at any time. And not only will this be, let's say, a challenge for him to pull all this off on 6 days' notice, it's a challenge for Kamaru Usman to suddenly switch gears, prepare for an entirely different type of opponent, and know that opponent is fearless. He's going to be there the whole fight, and he can finish you at any point. This is wild. I give Masvidal a legitimate chance here, Bill, to sort of shock the world, upset the apple cart in the welterweight division. And, we've been waiting for Conor McGregor to come back for a while and sort of spice up the marquee crossover main events. We could be living in a world where on Saturday night, Jorge Masvidal is your new welterweight champion and probably dropping Conor McGregor's name as a challenge in the post-fight interview. That is just a wild turn of events.
All right, Brian Campbell. So every single sport, every single business has its unique challenges and difficulties in this bizarro pandemic COVID-19 world. UFC still has fights, obviously. They don't have a gate. It's a big part of the economics of the sport. How has it impacted MMA, the fact that you don't have the consistent gate that you did in the past?
Look, if you had me on this show, 2-3 weeks ago, Bill, I would tell you that it's handcuffing them considerably. Dana White had said in multiple public interviews the company expects to lose $100 million in this calendar year on that lack of live gate alone. It's the reason why some of those big-name fighters like Jon Jones and initially Jorge Masvidal were not only holding out, but they really weren't going to fight anyway. If you don't have that extra live gate to pay for what it costs to bring these superstars in. You want a point of reference? When Conor McGregor returned in early this year to knock out Cowboy Cerrone, that live gate in Las Vegas was $11 million for one night. So that's the kind of money you can generate for these big fights. Well, what's happened, you know, in the last few weeks since then? It's really the reveal that UFC and Dana White, which has been teasing this whole idea of Fight Island from the very beginning of the outbreak in March, they decided to make Fight Island not some random island in the middle of the Caribbean with palm trees and sharks with frickin' laser beams. They decided to go back to Abu Dhabi, where they have a great connection. They can do it there on Yaz Island. They can sequester everyone and make their own little village. And you have to believe, Bill, they're also getting a hefty site fee, because a month ago, if we would have guessed that UFC can come out in July and put on a card with not only three title fights atop it, but some real superstars, right? Jorge Masvidal, Jose Aldo, some household names, I wouldn't have thought it was possible. They have found that pipeline right now where there's still some big money to be made. You might not be getting it from the fans crossing the turnstile, but you do have international suitors who want their name in the headline. And certainly for Abu Dhabi, the UAE, they're going to get that with four fight cards over the next 2 weeks.
Brian Campbell, give me another fight. I mean, you said it. This card is loaded. Give me another fight that you are looking forward to the most that you think could be the best show on the ticket outside of the fight we've been talking about.
Well, we know Max Holloway is the longtime reigning UFC featherweight champion. He had a 14-fight win streak within the division, beat all the legends, including Jose Aldo twice. And then he got upset in December by this newcomer, Alexander Volkanovski from Australia. He's short in stature, but he's a cerebral fighter who comes out and plays chess and sort of disarms you. They're running back an immediate rematch this weekend. And even though Max Holloway is the underdog after losing a close decision in December, he's going to be in an interesting spot. He had a rough training camp like everybody else. He had to do it over Zoom. He was unable to meet with his coaches while he was living in Hawaii. He had no sparring. But he's going to come in there as an interesting underdog to try to regain his title at 28 years old, already an all-time great. And I did mention Jose Aldo, the 33-year-old Brazilian legend. Bill, we know him as the featherweight king for a decade. He has cut down in weight now to bantamweight. And even though he dropped 10 pounds and is riding a two-fight losing skid, UFC putting his star power in there on Saturday for the vacant 135-pound title against a newcomer and Peter Yan, a Russian destroyer. This is some interesting theater this weekend as UFC, roll out the red carpet from the idea of this being one of their showcase Super Bowl-type cards that we see every year. Somehow, they're still pulling it off on Fight Island.
He is the man ascending in UFC media circles, Brian Campbell. Brian Campbell, CBS. Check him out at CBS Sports HQ. Watch him on Showtime. My friend, my best to your family. Stay healthy. Appreciate you making some time, brother.
Can't wait to meet you again at the casino table. So one day, okay? One day in the future. All right? Great talking to you.
You too. The last time I was at a casino with Mr. Campbell, I believe I won like $1,500 playing poker, which, to be fair, is a whole lot of money. He's my lucky charm. What is it? Rabbit's feet? Weren't those lucky back in the day? I wonder if that actually works. All right, let's transition here on the Jim Rome Show. I'm Bill Ryder filling in from some UFC talk to some NBA talk. Howard Beck, really, really talented national NBA writer for Bleach Report, going to join me here on the program just after we get a CBS Sports Radio update from...
Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show with guest host Bill Ryder on CBS Sports Radio.
Welcome back into the show. Bill Ryder with you, filling in for Jim. Happy Tuesday. Thanks for being here. Do you ever set on Twitter alerts for people, and then you get all their tweets, and then you have to, like, unalert them, and you feel like you're unfollowing them, but not really? That happened. I followed a bunch of, like, alerted a bunch of people. This next guy is the opposite. Like, and he tweets a lot. Every time he tweets, I'm glad that I follow him, at Howard Beck on Twitter, which means, hard to decipher, he is Howard Beck in real life from Bleach Report, NBA national writer, on the show now. Howard, I hope you guys are healthy and doing well in Brooklyn. Thanks for making time, buddy.
Bill, my friend, thank you for the kind intro. We're all doing well. Hope all's well with you and your family as well. And it's nice of you to say about my Twitter feed and the alerts, because I actually have had like some very good friends actually say, you know what, I'm sorry, I had to turn off alerts. You're going a little too far. Like, I'm just a little over the top, right? Like, I get on a political bender every so often, and I'm just retweeting like crazy. I can't help myself. My finger just like gets away from me. And I've had some friends say, dude, I'm still following you, but just, I'm opting out on the alerts, which, you know what, totally fair. Some days I lose a little control.
I actually went the other direction. I pared down other alerts so I make sure I saw yours. Maybe it's just, you know, the bias of agreeing with almost everything that you tweet. The only thing is, though, I do have some concerns about just this, Howard. Do you ever sleep? Because you, I literally get alerts from you 24 hours a day. I'm like, when does this guy sleep?
I've just put it on like auto retweet for overnight, you know, like every like seventh tweet, it just automatically retweets on my behalf.
Let me give you the same question that I have asked you and every person like you every time that we have had a conversation about the place we find ourselves in the world, but news changes constantly. With what we know, Howard Beck, what is your confidence level that the NBA bubble in Orlando is going to complete and crown a champion in October?
If the question were my confidence level and whether it should, I might answer differently. But like whether it will, my confidence level is pretty high. I think it's 75-80% to happen, which means there's still a pretty big chunk there of not happening potential, because the situation in Florida, of course, is dire. Hospitals are filling up. ICUs are filling up. The positivity rate, the positive infection rate is high. Hospitalizations are high. It's alarming in the surrounding communities, including where the NBA will be. And, you know, whether they would pull out because of optics or the feeling that it might be a burden on that community ultimately, I think it's probably more likely to be for those reasons than for reasons of concern over NBA personnel, because the NBA's consistent position has been, we think the bubble will do a very good job of keeping our people healthy. We think we'll be fine. We think what we've set up, even if there's a lot of the virus in the surrounding community, we'll be fine in the way we're setting up our campus. So I don't think the NBA is particularly concerned that they will have an outbreak among NBA personnel. But that could happen too. And I don't know what the tipping point is. Like the league, I don't even know if the league knows what the tipping point is for infections in the community around the bubble or for infections within the bubble. But, you know, so there's a tipping point somewhere. Like this can't be an all, you know, it happens regardless. Like at some point the league may have to reconsider. But as of now, it seems to me like they have no intention of turning back.
Howard Beck here on the show on Twitter at Howard Beck, Bill Ryder filling in for Jim Rome. Let me ask you this, this what if. If there are a good number of positive tests that don't impact play in the bubble, and then Howard Beck, Giannis or LeBron or Kawhi test positive and have to miss 10 to 14 games and a conference finals, right, or a semifinals, do you think just one of those guys coupled with some other tests are enough for the NBA? Or do you think it's we're powering through even though the Memphis Grizzlies just advanced over the Lakers?
Well, you can't call off the playoffs just because the Grizzlies knocked off the Lakers,
okay,
right?
Got it, yeah.
I mean, it would be weird, but it's not a reason to cancel the rest of the postseason. I think that it's not going to be about who gets the virus if somebody gets it. It's going to be about how many. And, you know, if you had 20 players in the course of the entire bubble get the virus, but it was 20 players scattered across 10 teams and at different times, and no team was prevented from fielding a team, they would just keep going. Like, they're not going to stop because LeBron gets the virus or three guys on a single team get the virus. If a team can't function anymore, they've got a bigger problem on their hands. But I think this is about, you know, understanding that if someone's probably going to get sick at some point and they manage it as they go. And it really is just about containing it and not having it become an outbreak, a mini pandemic within the bubble.
Howard Beck here on the Jim Rome Show. Howard, I know this because I follow your many tweets. You believe in science. You wear a mask. You understand that this virus can spread and that there is a danger to anyone who gets it, even if it's not 99%, there's a risk for you personally, if you don't mind me asking. I hope you don't, because I'm going to ask it. What do you plan to do as it relates to going to Orlando or not?
So the NBA has reserved basically 10 slots for print reporters. That would include me. I did not apply. I had no interest in pursuing that. They did get 10. Some people have probably self-identified by now, and the rest will. To me, Bill, it just wasn't worth the trade-off. It's a commitment of up to 94 days, potentially, if the finals were to go 7. You are sequestered just like the players and everybody else are, but without a lot of the perks that the NBA teams get. And you're just because you're on the campus and getting tested every day and sequestered and therefore presumably not a threat to be a carrier of the virus, despite all that, reporters in the bubble will still be prevented from having any real one-on-one access with anybody. So being there doesn't mean you can stroll over to the Laker team hotel and go chat it up with Rob Pelinka or Frank Vogel. It doesn't mean you're going to be able to sidle with LeBron as he's coming out of, the golf course or something. Like, it's all the things that we do as reporters, all of the most valuable things, the value of being present is to have individual conversations with people on and off the record to get insight, to get stories, to write interesting stories about what's happening. And if you don't have that kind of access, it really takes away all of the incentive and purpose of being at an event. And the amount of access, even for reporters in the bubble, is going to be so restricted and so managed that it just didn't seem like it was worth the trade-off. As somebody who, like you, I've got a family, and that's a long time to be away for what would be a very little payoff. So, no, not going within the bubble. There's an option to go outside the bubble, stay wherever you want, and really the only thing you can do then is go to the games and be seated pretty far away.
Yep.
You're not in the press conferences or anything else. I have considered potentially doing that for the finals, but that's months away, and we'll see where the state of our society is by then.
Yeah, that's my plan, is to do that very thing for the finals, maybe the conference finals, for all the reasons you outlined. Howard Beck here on the Jim Rome Show, Bill Ryder filling in. All right, Howard, let's engage in some optimism, because why not, and we could use it in 2020. Let's just say that to a large degree, this operation the NBA has set up in Orlando is effective. They are able to play the 8 games and then the playoffs as they're planned without much to any disruption. Are there teams that you think on a neutral court have stark advantages or disadvantages compared to what would have happened had things been normal?
It's the hardest question to answer, at least to answer intelligently, because we're all speculating here. We're kind of guessing. Even people, personnel in the NBA, scouts and coaches, don't know how to answer this question, really. But, you can take a few stabs at it, right? The Philadelphia 76ers were dominant at home and horrible on the road for a team that should be a contender, right? So now there's no home and there's no road. Whatever was beguiling them on the road, whatever was giving them, just mental hiccups, is eliminated. But they've lost the dominance at home, too, and Philly can be a tough place to play. And that's going to go across the board. Milwaukee, great home team. How dominant are they when they don't have a crowd behind them and whatever was making them such a force at home? It's really hard to say. So the home-road thing is one part of it. The other piece that is just really hard to gauge is that with everybody having been off for 3.5-4 months, I do think that rhythm, chemistry, momentum, those are real things. We always talk about you want to be peaking at the right time in the NBA, heading into the playoffs. Well, no one's peaking. No one has any momentum. They haven't played in months. And team chemistry is about timing and reading each other and getting in a certain rhythm. And, can certain teams pick that back up more quickly than others? Do some teams rely less on rhythm than others? Somebody suggested to me, hey, the Bucks are really a rhythm team because everything goes through Giannis and nobody else creates on that team, and they're all waiting to play off of him. So maybe it's going to hurt the Bucks more because they need that timing and that sync between Giannis and his supporting cast. Whereas, hey, the Lakers, you got two guys in LeBron and Anthony Davis, or the Clippers with Kawhi and Paul George, who, these guys are just battering rams. Just keep getting them the ball and they'll find a way to score.
Are there any teams? I know Miami Heat fans have been pushing the idea that they're one of those teams. Dallas Mavericks having Luka Doncic, a really talented young guy. They have a pretty good road record. If that translates to a neutral floor, Any teams that would not have been contenders that you think have a chance to be better than they would have been, given what you just described?
You know, it's funny. I do think that everything I just said to your question, I think you can make the case that we have an expanded field. If it were three teams before the shutdown, Lakers, Clippers, Bucks, that were the clear favorites, maybe with everybody having been off. And, you know, look, James Harden all of a sudden got in phenomenal shape, and Jokic got in great shape, and a lot of other guys, who knows who's gotten out of shape, that maybe this is a more wide-open field because no one's got a rhythm, because no one's got home court advantage. And so if that's the case, you know, could you see a scenario where, and I'm not a Rockets believer, but could you see a scenario where Harden and Westbrook just get in a groove and catch some teams flat-footed because of the weirdness of this long shutdown and everything? Yeah, maybe. And I think in the East, I was never certain that Milwaukee was that far ahead despite their record. So I've always thought Toronto and Boston and maybe even Miami have a shot. And you know, look, Philly, they're a weird team. Their chemistry's always been weird, but they're healthy now with Simmons and Embiid. And so, you know, you can't rule them out either. And, you know, I had Kenny Smith from TNT on my podcast yesterday, and he basically listed 9 teams that he thought were viable contenders, and that included Dallas.
Howard Beck, you are a good man. Love the insight. I'll be following you on Twitter at Howard Beck, and really appreciate you, buddy, making time. Continue to be safe out there in New York City, pal.
You too, Bill. Thanks for having me, man. Take care.
You too, Howard. Thank you, buddy. Howard Beck on the show, covers the NBA for Bleacher Report. Great guy. Great guy, too. At Howard Beck on Twitter. I'm with him. I don't know that we can identify all the teams, but I think the field is absolutely expanded. There are going to be contenders who would not have been contenders before all this happened. And I'm with Howard. I'm not a Rockets believer. But maybe. I wasn't a Mavericks believer this year. Maybe. I wasn't a Heat believer, but that's a defensive-minded team with Jimmy Butler, who's kind of found the right place for that chip on his shoulder. Maybe. It's going to be interesting if they can get it off the ground and really continue it. I want to circle back to Patrick Mahomes and what this contract says about his future level of greatness in our culture. That's next here on the Jim Rome Show.